Primaries in four states last night set up races for Congress in the fall. Gina Haspel is moving closer to being confirmed as director of the CIA, and House Speaker Paul Ryan is under pressure from Republicans to put new immigration bills to a vote. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you support the nomination of Gina Haspel as CIA director? Should senators vote to confirm her despite concerns raised over her connection with practices like waterboarding in the past? And with immigration continuing to be a tough issue for Congress, what solution do you want to see, especially when it comes to the so-called Dreamers? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also email ideas@WPR.org. Scott Wong is a senior staff writer at The Hill. He covers Paul Ryan and House Republicans. Scott, welcome back to the show.
Thanks so much for having me.
Well, Scott, let's start with some of the primary elections around the state. We had Nebraska, Pennsylvania, Idaho, and Oregon. What stood out to you? What were you watching?
I think a lot of the attention was on Pennsylvania. In terms of the Senate, on the Senate side, we saw a Trump-backed congressman named Lou Barletta win his Senate GOP primary. He will square off against incumbent Democrat Bob Casey. In the fall, this is going to be a big race with lots of money, outside money pouring in, which will, you know, in part be part of the battle for control of the Senate. In terms of on the House side, this was the first election that we saw the newly drawn congressional districts that were upheld this year by the courts, and that tended to move in the Democrats' favor. We saw a number in the suburbs outside of Philadelphia. We saw a number of Democrats win nominations. Many of them were women. I think that's an interesting thing to note, including one who I heard on one of your NPR shows this morning, Chrissy Houlihan. She is an Air Force veteran, a teacher. She is the type of candidate who Democrats like to recruit, and so she will most likely be serving in Congress, given that Republicans don't have a very strong candidate they're putting up in that seat. So I think the question is, where is the excitement heading into the fall election? If you look at who the Democrats are nominating in these races, it looks like they're women of all sorts of backgrounds. The question is whether Democrats have that excitement, or if Trump can sort of stir up the conservative base and get his voters to turn out at the polls.
And in November, people are going to be watching Pennsylvania a lot. It sounds like Democrats feel they underperformed there in the presidential election 2016. And those new maps you mentioned set by the state Supreme Court. If Democrats want to take control of the House, they need a lot of these Pennsylvania seats to swing their way, right?
That's right. There's a lot of open seats in Pennsylvania this year because of retirements, because of some resignations. And so Pennsylvania really is up for grabs. We could see the delegation, if Democrats have a really great year, we could see the delegation go from a very Republican delegation to a more of a Democratic delegation. And also, I would point out, I forgot to mention that the delegation is currently, or for the last few years, has been all male. So the fact that Democrats have nominated a number of women for these seats is significant, and we will likely see that composition of the delegation shift come November.
Talking to Scott Wong from The Hill, looking at some of the top stories in national politics. Let's move to the Gina Haspel nomination as director of the CIA. She had these Senate hearings this last week, I think. A lot of questions raised about torture, about waterboarding and black site prisons. It seemed maybe up in the air whether or not she might be confirmed. Some news this week, it looks a lot more likely, right?
That's right. I mean, it looks like she does, in fact, have the votes to clear the full Senate. Earlier today, she cleared the Intelligence Committee. Her nomination did on a 10-5 vote behind closed doors. And just yesterday, three Democrats got on board: Heidi Heitkamp of North Dakota, Bill Nelson of Florida. Both of those two have tough races later this fall, as well as the top Democrat on the Intelligence Committee, Mark Warner. That brings to 5 the number of Democrats who are now supporting her nomination. It looks like that will put her over the top. You know, even though she does have a couple GOP defections. One thing that really did help her confirmation or her nomination was this letter that she sent to Democrats addressing some of those concerns about her past involvement in waterboarding and some of those harsh interrogation techniques, what John McCain certainly would call torture. She disavowed and distanced herself from some of those tactics, and that seemed to do the trick and appease folks like top Democrat on the Intelligence Committee, Mark Warner.
That had been a big issue for some Democrats questioning her. They made the case that she was really dodging their questions about the moral rightness of those actions in the past, whether they could happen again. Some Democrats came out of those hearings saying, our questions weren't really answered. This letter has done it at least for Senator Mark Warner.
Yeah, it sounds like it. And you know, that's not to say that many Democrats will vote no against her. I mean, a number of the liberals who are already sort of eyeing 2020 contests, people like Cory Booker and Kamala Harris and many others, are expected to be no votes. Dianne Feinstein came out strongly against Haspel. So Democrats, more and more Democrats will be in the no category. But again, she only needs a handful of Democrats to join Republicans. And it looks like that could either head to the Senate floor later this week or sometime early next week.
And the president's security and foreign policy team has seen some big changes lately. Now John Bolton in as national security advisor. The previous CIA director, Mike Pompeo, he's now Secretary of State. This is a big change. Is there an idea that now that these pieces are in place, we'll see stability in the foreign policy and security arena in the White House?
I think the Pompeo move from CIA to Secretary of State was very significant. Already this week, he has indicated that he is beginning to staff up the State Department. That had been a huge concern from Republicans and Democrats on Capitol Hill, that under Secretary of State Rex Tillerson, that he was not really filling these key positions, diplomatic positions around the world, and that the United States message and diplomacy was not reaching some of our partners around the world. Pompeo, who is very close to President Trump and in fact, met with the North Korean leader very recently and has been sort of facilitating this Trump-Kim summit coming up. He's very trusted by the president, and he has one of his first moves as Secretary of State has been to sort of reverse what Tillerson was doing with the State Department and starting to fill some of these vacant positions throughout his agency.
We're talking to Scott Wong, senior staff writer at The Hill, about some of the week's top news out of Washington. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Coming up, should Congress pass new immigration bills trying to address the status of Dreamers, people brought into the country illegally as youth, here now kind of in limbo? Join in with your answer to that question at 800-642-1234. Also, do you think Speaker Paul Ryan, when he's replaced as either Speaker or Minority Leader next year, should a more conservative Republican get that spot? And should the White House issue an apology to Senator John McCain over leaked comments? You can join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@WPR.org. Right now, we continue our talk with Scott Wong, senior staff writer at The Hill, looking at the week's top stories in national politics. And Scott, immigration coming up in the U.S. House, kind of this maverick movement to try to get a vote on various bills, even though Speaker Ryan doesn't want this to happen right now. What's going on?
Well, what we're seeing is a handful of moderate Republicans who are trying to go around Speaker Ryan and their leadership team and force a series of immigration votes, specifically having to do with DACA, the children who were brought to the country illegally by their parents. President Trump, as you remember, rolled back that President Obama DACA program. And so these are moderate Republicans who are trying to force some kind of action on immigration. So far, we have not seen anything move through the House of Representatives this year. And all they need to do is get 218 signatures. Democrats said they will join that effort, but that Republicans need to bring along 25 of their own members in order to force these votes. So far, they have 20, and so they're five short. And so it's a very tense moment on Capitol Hill right now as we wait to see whether these moderate Republicans can get these five additional supporters.
And Scott, I've been watching you on Twitter. You have this discharge petition watch going on as more people come in. They could be happening now. Thanks for taking time away from that. I want to give a listen to Speaker Ryan. He says, hey, let's not jump the gun here. They're doomed to get vetoed by President Trump. Here's a listen to him talking about it this week.
That's what we're working on right now, is what is a bill that deals with DACA and deals with all the security other issues that can get some Democrats and get a presidential signature. Going down a path and having some kind of a spectacle on the floor that just results in a veto doesn't solve a problem. We actually would like to solve this problem, and that is why I think it's important for us to come up with a solution that the president can support.
And critics have pointed out that the House voted to repeal Obamacare over 60 times while Obama was president. So even if this is a symbolic bill, maybe do it. So what happens procedurally, Scott, if these Democrats and a handful of Republicans, 25, sign these petitions? What's next?
Well, what's next would be another process called Queen of the Hill, and basically the House of Representatives would debate and then vote on four separate immigration bills, going from very more liberal bills to a Trump proposal to something else more conservative known as the Goodlatte-McCall bill, named after the Judiciary and Homeland Security chairman. That bill would provide allow DACA recipients to temporarily remain in the United States, but it would also come with more aggressive border enforcement measures as well as some cuts to legal immigration programs. And so basically what Speaker Ryan is saying is that give us a little bit more time to work with the president to come to some kind of solution that will be amenable to both moderate Democrats, moderate Republicans, as well as something that can get the president's signature. However, these DACA supporters, especially the Republican DACA supporters who are feeling the heat at the ballot, believe that they've given the speaker enough time already and that he's failed to act, and that's why they're prepared to force this action.
Right, those negotiations happened quite a while back, didn't they? There was that big cameras on, people from both chambers of Congress in with the president, negotiating on camera, and really nothing ended up coming out of that.
That's right. This is an issue that's been sort of simmering for a number of months. And as I mentioned, as we sort of tick closer and closer to Election Day, these moderate Republicans are really feeling the heat from their Democratic opponents. Many of these moderates come from Hispanic-heavy districts, districts that are, you know, deal with agriculture and other issues, and so this is a top priority for them, and they need something done on this issue in order to survive in November.
At a procedural level, for procedure nerds, this is pretty exciting stuff, but even if they do get something passed in the House, then it would have to get bought into in the Senate, and then, as Speaker Ryan was saying, the president would have to sign off on it. It doesn't seem that likely that anything that happens today is going to result in actual law being passed, does it?
I think that's right. I think the reason we're in this situation in the first place in dealing with gridlock is because it's been so hard to find that sweet spot, something the president can sign into law, something that Democrats and Republicans can agree on and get through both chambers. And so even if in Queen of the Hill, the bill that receives the most number of votes over this magic number of 218 would be the one to advance to the Senate. But again, the Senate would cause all sorts of problems, and Mitch McConnell may not want to exactly deal with immigration just a handful of months before Election Day.
Talking to Scott Wong from The Hill about some of the top stories in national politics. Here's one right smack in the middle of your beat, Scott. The question of who is going to follow Speaker Paul Ryan as the leader of House Republicans? He has said he's not running again in November. He's going to, as far as we know now, finish out his term in Congress and as Speaker. But then there's that big question mark. Who's running the show for Republicans after that? What do we know?
Well, there's so many question marks right now. What we know is that Speaker Ryan has endorsed Kevin McCarthy, his top deputy and the majority leader, to succeed him as Speaker of the House. But what we don't know is who is going to retain control of the House of Representatives come November. Will it be the Republicans or will Democrats take it back? In that instance of Democrats, if they are successful in November, many Republicans are raising the question of, do we stick with the same team that basically turned over the majority to the Democrats, or do we go in a completely different direction? And if the answer is going in a different direction, do we go with somebody much more conservative? One name that has continued to crop up time and again is Jim Jordan. He's the founding chairman of the very conservative Freedom Caucus. This is the Freedom Caucus that basically ousted or pushed out Speaker Boehner back in 2015. That led to the rise of Speaker Ryan of Wisconsin. And so this is a debate that is happening sort of, you know, behind the scenes right now. Is does the conference go with the same team or does it go in a different direction? Obviously, many of those answers won't be known until November when the election is decided.
Speaking of being a procedure nerd, Scott, check me on this. If I want to be the Speaker of the House, I need to win a majority of the votes in the full House of Representatives. If I want to be minority leader for my party, I need a majority of people from my party in the House. And those are very different votes, right?
That's exactly right. Very few people can reach 218 votes to be Speaker of the House. That's the number of votes you need on the House floor. But in order to be minority leader, you just need half of your conference, which could be as few as 90 or 95 votes. That'd be like half of 180. And so that's a much lower threshold. That's something that many Republicans think somebody like Jim Jordan could achieve, even though they say Jim Jordan could never get to 218 because there'd be so many moderate Republicans against him. But that is another interesting dynamic in this whole scenario is, you know, whether we're talking about the Speaker of the House and 218 votes or minority leader, which is a much lower threshold.
And the behind-the-scenes politicking is going on now, and that question of who's going to be voting and what they're running for won't be known until after Election Day in November.
That's right. Usually the internal leadership elections come a couple weeks after Election Day, so it will be sometime in mid-November. And then in early January, they will have the formal vote for Speaker of the House on the House floor. We don't know if that will be for a Democrat or Republican yet. And the Democrats are grappling with their own problems, trying to figure out if they stick with Nancy Pelosi or go in an entirely different direction with somebody a little bit younger, somebody like Joe Crowley of New York. So that's for another day.
And lastly, Scott, reports this week that a White House staffer made a joke about Senator John McCain, saying it doesn't matter, McCain's opposition to Gina Haspel, a CIA director, saying it doesn't matter, he's dying anyway. Now, that was leaked to the press. Here's Press Secretary Sarah Sanders being asked about that incident this week.
Does the White House not think that you need to condemn these remarks or comments?
Again, I'm not going to validate a leak one way or the other out of an internal staff meeting.
Are you saying that you didn't say this?
Again, I'm not going to validate a leak out of an internal staff meeting one way or the other.
Scott, what do you make of this story? People talking about what was said on the one hand and the White House talking about it being leaked on the other.
Well, I'll give a plug for my own publication, The Hill, which broke that story last week. Some of our White House reporters broke that story. We didn't know it was going to turn into such a big story and snowball, but it has sort of survived the last five or six news cycles. And I think part of the reason is because the White House, and specifically the President of the United States, has refused to apologize for these comments, basically dismissing John McCain and saying his opinions on Gina Haspel and the CIA don't matter because he's dying anyway, was the quote. from this White House staffer. I think a lot of lawmakers are sort of scratching their head on Capitol Hill saying, why don't they just go ahead and issue the apology at this point? Trump and the White House are very dug in, and it doesn't look like any sort of apology is coming. That's sort of been the MO from this White House. They're very allergic to apologies, and we have not seen the president apologize too often. I can't remember when he has issued one in the past. So I think that's why this story has sort of stayed alive and penetrated through so many news cycles.
Have we heard from Senator McCain himself or his family on this? Of course, he's not in the Senate now. He's has this very aggressive form of brain cancer. Have we heard from his family on this?
We've heard in very strong terms from his daughter, Meghan McCain, who is on The View, is a regular guest on The View, and she has spoken with a number of White House officials and has been demanding an apology and has sort of stuck up for her father. And she says, you know, she won't go away until she gets some sort of justice for her father. She has a loud microphone on Twitter and on television. And so, McCain has a number of allies. But again, yesterday, President Trump was on Capitol Hill meeting, having lunch with senators, and not one senator, asked him to apologize directly to his face. So that sort of tells you a little bit about what that relationship is like between Republicans and the president. Many are fearful of the president and don't want to cross him and get on his bad side.
Scott, thanks a lot for joining us again.
Thank you so much.
That's Scott Wong, senior staff writer at The Hill. He joined us for a weekly look at the top news from the nation's capital.